real quick while we do that. And let's give a warm welcome to Peter.
My name is Peter, a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess first things first, congratulations to all the celebrants and for your very brief comments and accepting coins. I appreciate that. Thank you. tough crowd. For someone who's just walking into their first AA meeting wondering what's going on with all this coin stuff and all the talks and the acceptance and speeches and all of that, I learned a long time ago, and I'm sure the people who celebrate it will agree with me, that it isn't so much about getting a coin, but it's really more about how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Because the folks who accepted coins based on their track records and many other track records, we shouldn't be at an AA meeting having a cup of coffee, saying thank you for another year of sobriety. But somehow, we do certain things in Alcoholics Anonymous, not what we want to do, but what the program suggests, what fellowship guides us to do, and we give it away in service, and somehow there's a connection with God, and somehow we put another day together, another month, another year, and then we're here. And we go from newbies to becoming, hopefully, elder statesmen in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then we stand at the door and pass it away. And I'm very grateful for the message that was given to me, so congratulations to the celebrants. I would go to an AA meeting, and when I was new, God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988, and I would go into meetings this big and be petrified. There was a meeting in Minnesota called the Three Legacies meeting, and it was a Friday night meeting, speaker meeting, maybe 300 people there. You know, it was huge. The literature rack was as long as this room, and everyone was dressed with suits and ties and big badges. Hi, my name is, and they'd welcome and they'd smile and they just looked great. And they scared me to death. And I would sit in meetings, and they would have their anniversary night at the end of the month, and there'd be a whole bunch of folks lined up to get, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years, 40 years, 10, whatever it was. And I'm counting days. I'm a few months together, wondering how do you even get to a year? I mean, how do you pull this off? Who do you need to know to get this done? Who do you pay off to get this done? And when I would hear men and women getting, you know, 5 and 10 and 15, 20-year medallions, this was completely out of my realm. I just couldn't even, first of all, I didn't think I'd live that long. And I had this constant voice in my head that would always tell me, who are you kidding, when I was feeling good. This voice that would tell me, who are you kidding, when I says, well, maybe I can do that one day. Maybe I can go give a talk. Maybe I can be a sponsor one day. And the voice would say, who are you kidding? But I just kept following the elders. And I tried to do what they were doing. And I had heroes. I still have heroes. I have people who I idolized when I first came in. And they say that's not a good thing because everyone's clay feet. When you're new, idol someone. If you have someone, if they're your idol at the beginning, it's okay, because you will follow what they're doing. You will try to dress like them and sound like them and do exactly what they're doing. And at the beginning, we need a little leash around our neck so we can follow these folks, these elder statesmen. Not the men or the women who are acting like drunks without a drink in them as soon as the meeting's over, but the people who are living this. And we're street smart. You can spot who's doing what. You know, we're not naive. We might be new. We're not naive, you know. You know who's running and gunning as soon as the meeting's over and on the way into the meeting. You know who's walking the walk. We know. It doesn't take much for us to just be very discerning as to who's doing what. And God gave me a little street smarts, and I would see these men. I think I shared this last week. I was very attracted to men who walk softly and carry a big book. I was very attracted to spiritual men. I was no longer attracted to gangsters and street guys. In fact, it got me sick when I would see that going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I liked the men who were sure, who told me yes, no, and here's how to do it, and they didn't beat around the bush. They're very clear, and they didn't care about hurting my feelings. They were in the life-saving business. And interesting, we're giving coins tonight. We're talking about step 12, and here we are talking about passing the message on, and everything seems to fit. I am so grateful for the people who were standing at the door when I got here and they didn't care where I had been. And when I got here in 1988, in my 7 treatment center and started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, I was really clear on my truth. I did a boatload of drugs, but I'm not a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. The one described on page 21 in our big book, the type 4 alcoholic they talk about in Chapter to the Wise, that's me. I'm a person who lives in the streets, and you pull me out of a dumpster when I'm on a drunk, and that's how I lived, and I couldn't stop it. I couldn't control it. So I'm clear on my truth. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988, these men and women said, welcome. They didn't ram a big book down my throat. They didn't ram a sponsor down my throat. They did eventually, but on the way in, they said, welcome. There were no checks and balances at the door. They knew I was full of shame and guilt and remorse, and I hated the way I looked because I didn't have clothes. I didn't smell too good, and I looked like I just came out of a treatment center. And they just said, welcome, and they even went as far as giving me a hug. And I would wonder why they I would cringe. They should have been cringing. I was cringing. Why are they doing this? I wasn't even good with that kind of physical intimacy with another man when a guy would hug you and say, welcome, thanks for being here. But that's what they did. And they didn't ask me what treatment center I went to. They didn't say, ask me, you know, who your sponsor is, where you're in the steps. They just said, welcome. When I was coming around a little while, then they start to see me as a regular, and then they would say, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a home group? Are you in the steps? And they would ask questions like that, lovingly ask me questions. But they befriended me at first because they knew what I was, and they would tell me about themselves. And it would be the meeting before the meeting by the coffee pot, because these men weren't looking to pick up girls before the meeting. These men were looking for a new drunk. And when I walked in, they said, he's new, let's go get him. And they would surround me, and they would just talk to me. Sometimes I see Dave outside the Sunday night meeting. We just shoot the breeze, 2 drunks talking. And if a new one walks in, we'll get him. They stand by the door. If anyone's ever read it's a poem, Stand by the Door. Tremendous piece of information. That's what they were doing when I got here. And they would talk to me, just talk to me. I didn't know, because I do it now. While they were talking, they were reeling me in. And boom, they pull you back. Gotcha. They had to gain trust, because when we come in here, we don't trust anything. A lot of street codes, a lot of street values, and they had to break through that. I'm just so grateful for that. I'm also grateful for the men who got to a podium and the women who got to a podium and didn't have fear about talking about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and separating the program and the fellowship and service, and didn't have fear about talking about the big book or God or the steps, or the spiritual experiences that they were having and had. They didn't hide it in a closet. They were clear on singleness of purpose. They were clear on our traditions and the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was vital to someone like me who was starving for something. There were plenty of people who told me, put the plug in a jug, don't drink, go to meetings, make 90 meetings in 90 days, and they meant well. But those are the remedies that would kill a drunk like me, because I don't have the power to put the plug in a jug and keep it in there. I couldn't make 90 meetings in 90 days, so I was holding on to one more day. 90 days of this? Could even fathom that. But they did say, just keep coming back, and the only mistake you can make is not come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Drunk or sober, keep coming back. Let us take you back, and they would catch you. They would catch you if they saw you going sideways. They weren't afraid to ruffle feathers. They weren't afraid who thought of what of them. They weren't afraid of that. They were worried about saving a drunk. And I must tell you, I don't see a lot of that. Our old-timers do it. The Daves in our fellowships. The Garretts in our fellowships. I see them doing it. But we have a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the 5 to 10 year range where other things have taken priority. We're not looking for the drunks by the door. We're not looking for a new one walking in here. And I've seen some new folks walk in here, and I see a lot of folks just hanging out. Not even, who's that? Let's go get them. And maybe you go over to the drunk and you say, are you new? And they say, no, I'm sober 30 years. You know, so what? I did a talk one time, 2 examples of this. I just moved to Staten Island. There was a guy, Artie B. He's passed on. And it was a Sunday night meeting on Amboy Road. and I just moved to Staten Island. I had spoken in Staten Island a bunch of times, but I'd never been to this meeting, and it was just a short distance from where I just bought my house, so I said, I'll go try this meeting. And I walked down, and the entrance was there, and the coffee pot was over here. And Artie B was sober 30,000 years by then, and he was pouring a cup of coffee, and he looked up, and he gave me a double. He put the coffee down, made a beeline for me. His young fellow, my name is Artie B. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I had a handful of years by then. And I thanked him, and I said, well, I've been around a little while, but I took a moment to thank him for doing that because I wasn't seeing it. I was up in bed somewhere in Bed-Stuy one time. I was the only white person in the neighborhood. And I walked in to the meeting. I was a speaker. And I sat down, and no one even paid attention. Now, I look like the middle of an Oreo. I mean, you could spot me a mile away. No one did anything. This one African-American fellow. Now, the room was twice this big. There was about 200 people in this meeting. And I was there to speak, and I'm just sitting down, sipping a cup of coffee. And this gentleman did the same thing. He looked at me, and he must have said, we got company. And he made his way across the room. And he did the same thing Artie did. He said, welcome, young fella. It's going to be okay. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And he says, I'm the speaker. But that's what the AAs did. Right. That's part of carrying a message. Not the mess, not the drunk, but carrying a message. And I can be, our big book talks about in this 12-step how we may be inconvenienced with our little pleasures. Like watching TV, maybe socializing, but a new drunk shows up. What's my primary purpose? When I can put stuff ahead of helping a drunk, I've lost my way. And I may not know it right then and there. There was one particular time, my brother, I was living in Brooklyn, and I just got married, and my brother came over with his wife, and we were watching a Knick Pacer playoff game. And we had some dinner, and we're watching the game, and it's the fourth quarter, and Reggie Miller's doing Reggie Miller does, and we're on edge, and we're not real spiritual, we're cursing and hollering, and it's a great time, we're watching the game, and my phone rings. And there was a gentleman, we called him Louis the Butcher. He's dead. He died of alcoholism. And they call me up and says, Pete, we need you to help us with a 12-step call. Louie's in the middle of the street, ranting and raving, he's drunk. We got to get him. And I went, now? There's 2 minutes left. You had to get drunk today. But I couldn't stay home. And so I told my wife, and I told my brother and his wife, listen, I got to go. I have something I need to take care of. And they knew. And I was so grateful I went and did that work. And we put him in a detox. And he went out and got drunk and he died. But that's what we do. Of maximum service to God is not lip service. Maximum service to God is not when I want to be of maximum service. It's when God calls. When the doorbell rings, I got to open the door. And if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, if it's 3 in the afternoon, I'm sitting on the beach, whatever I'm doing, I need to go. I need to do the 12-step call. Because I may be that guy's sponsor. Or he may be my sponsor one day. But God gave us spiritual wings to go fly, and my job is to go and carry this message. And sometimes it's work, and sometimes it's dirty work. Anyone's ever cleaned up a drunk on a 12-step call? Literally clean them up. Not only throw the stuff down the waste basket and the liquids in the sink and the dry goods out. I'm not talking, that's easy. I'm talking about a drunk who doesn't smell good and has gotten sick on himself. You've got to clean him up before you take him to a hospital. You get to a point where you're honored and privileged to do a service like that because no one else is going to do it for fun and for free. People get paid to do stuff like that. We'll do it for fun and for free. And we are fulfilled by doing work like that. There's something I was just reading, sharing with Marion. And Michael actually was kind of the inspiration for me to search this up. We talk about serving God, and our 12-step really was serving each other, taking these principles into all my affairs, carrying a message to another drunk. That's God work. Simply put, go do what God would do. He gave us the task. He gave you the chore to go bring his children back to him and pull them out of harm's way, pull them out of wreckage, pull them out of a bar, pull them out, where we got to pull them, to bring them, because the last stop on a block. And we keep praying to God. We're expecting Moses or the Messiah to show up. And he might one day. But right now, what do I do about the drunks walking in the street? How do I treat what seem to be the least important people? Do I clothe them? Do I feed them? Do I go visit them? Do I invite them into my house? Do I take care of what appears to be the least of the least? Because that's God. And then when I knock on the pearly gates and God says, what did you do? Well, I was waiting for you. I showed up in 100 different times and you ignored me. Huh? And here's the melting pot. Here's the hot spot for broken toys. This is it. Alcoholics Anonymous. Because we've all done something. We've all, with the name for it, it's been done and we've done it. We all have the stuff. We all got the shame. We all got the remorse. And very, very few of us in my 25 years come in here looking like we got 25 years. We might front good, but get a guy with 37 years, he'll see right through it and say, sit down next to me. That's what we do in Alcoholics. God gives us eyes to go past what you see. Gives us ears to go past what we're hearing. That's God work. That's gift. That's spiritual wings. That's part of our 12 step. And I can give this talk here about mechanics. I can give mechanics all night long on step 12. But how do I live this? How do I teach somebody what I've done with step 12? I can read out of this book and recite it. That's not going to do you any good unless I give you some experience with it. And what people did for me, more important, what you guys did for me and continue to do for me. Because every time I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a chair waiting for me and someone says, welcome. I'm here a long time now. But people don't take me for granted. They say, welcome, good to see you. Can I do that to others? I'm sober 25 years. I still love seeing the Daves, the old timers at a meeting, and who they say, how are you doing? Because I can talk to them. I still get excited when a newbie walks in looking for someone, for a sponsor, and doesn't have all the answers. I love when a drunk says, I don't know what to do anymore. Best answer you can give me. I don't know what to do. And I'll tell you, I'm in the treatment center business, and what treatment centers sometimes pump out are treatment center monsters. They're not teachable. They know about their feelings and their issues and their inner child and how to process their feelings and what meds to take. They don't know a damn thing about recovery, but they're going to come in here and tell us about recovery. And I love when a new drunk gets out of treatment like me and says, I don't know what to do. I'm dying. Or just sits down and listens and asks for a sponsor and little by slowly chops wood and carries water and gets through the archway and stands at the door quietly and waits for another drunk. That's what we do in step 12. But there's some things that we need to have to pass on this message, that I need to have to pass on this message. And that's an awakened spirit. And I can't get an awakened spirit if I stop being teachable, if I know what I need to do because I feel a certain way. Alcoholism doesn't care how I feel. It'll trick me. And I will get people to endorse my mind that's tricking me. I live in a world of illusion, and I think reality is illusion. How teachable am I after 25 years? How teachable am I after 90 days? How teachable am I with 60 days, and I start to feel good, and all the parts are working again? Oh, I know what I need to do. No, you don't. The worst thing a drunk can tell me, or an old timer, is I know what I need to do. You don't, because if you did, you would have done it already. But what am I passing on as a drunk in Alcoholics Anonymous? When I tell you I'm a recovered alcoholic, I don't say that, by the way, to be different than anyone else. Some people read that as I'm trying to be unique, I'm special, I'm cured. That's not why I say that. It's what our book tells us we can get, and it's my responsibility to experience getting recovered and then talk about being recovered. What great hope that I don't have to sit and be in recovering and going through drama after drama after drama. I can get to a place of recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and alcoholism, and that's what I get to pass on, how I went from sick and suffering to recovered, not cured, but recovered, where my days aren't consumed with drama. My days consumed with Alcoholics Anonymous and God. And when the time is right and the ground's fertile, God will say, I want to have you walk this walk with someone. And some of us are blessed where we have someone in our life that prays just as much as you do, that works with drunks just as much as you do, that go to meetings just as much as you do, is in the book just as much as you do. What a great life. It's all because another drunk saw me walking in the door, knew I was new, even though, you know, try to front like I got like 30 years. I'm a day one. I try to, you know, I'm good. But I walked hunched over, and I looked like a 90-year-old man. I was 28 when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. They spotted that. What am I passing on? A book says we can't transmit something we haven't got. And we will what we do, and that's untreated alcoholism. Blind leads the blind, we're both going in the ditch. What am I passing on to another drunk? How to get a date? How to do my taxes without getting caught and cheating? You know, just make meetings? What am I passing on? What responsibility we have as recovered members of this fellowship to pass on? I'm so grateful that God put teachers in my path, again, who weren't afraid of ruffling my feathers. There was a gentleman, Bob B., from Minnesota, Hastings, Minnesota. And I had a few months together. And he had about, I don't know, 18 or 20 years at the time. And he was a big, strappy Minnesota guy. And he saw me going sideways. I didn't see it. We can't see our own illusional thinking. It's like trying to see your own ears. You can't see them. You can see them. I can't see them. And my mind continues to endorse my illusional thinking, thinking you have the problem, I'm okay. Why are you bothering? But he wasn't about that. And he called me aside one time into his office, and he got as ugly as a man can get with another man. He didn't censor his language once. He pounded on his desk. He got right in my face. And I'm thinking, I hate him. I'm Peter Marinelli. You should kiss my ring when I walk in. Right? He didn't care. He commented on my clothes, how I was dressing. He commented on what my hair looked like. I can't believe that. It didn't look like this. And he just went up one side and down the other. And my first reaction is, why is this man picking on me? Because he loved me and he wasn't picking on me. He saw me going sideways and knew exactly where I was headed for and hit me right between the eyes with the truth. And I left his office, and by the time I got to the parking lot of where his office was, I had this thing go off saying, Peter, who are you kidding? But this time it was different. I can't do this anymore again. And I made a U-turn and went back into his office, and I wept like a 3-year-old. I says, help me. I don't know what to do. And then we began, and he gave me instruction because I was made teachable. What if he didn't care? What if he said, oh, I forget, I don't have time for this? And what if he wasn't afraid of getting right in my grill about what he saw? And I do that with men when I sponsor them, if they're going sideways, or when I work for a living. I will get right in somebody's, and I don't care how I sound. You're not dying in front of me. You're not dying in front of me. And as long as you're in front of me, I'm going to do what I can to get in the way of a moving train. And I don't care how I sound or what I have to do. God gave me some work to do, and I'm going to do it. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will get ugly even if it's a woman in front of me. I don't care. This illness has no mercy on us. It has no mercy on our family. It has no mercy on anyone. Why should I have mercy on it? I have mercy on the drunk. I have care and compassion on the drunk. And sometimes I got to go to war with your addiction, the way they went to war with mine. Practice these principles in all my affairs doesn't only mean holding the door open for the old lady who can't walk, or carrying packages across the street for an old man who can't walk. It's about doing God's work. And when I'm right, here's the deal. When I'm right with God, when we're experiencing oneness with God, we don't have to remember to do God's work. It's who we be. We've been transformed. And I'm not looking for people to endorse my negative behavior, because I have teachers who I go to, I'm accountable to, who will navigate me through. When I call a sponsor and I share inventory and I say, Pete, it sounds like this and not that, how teachable am I to say, okay, I'll follow your direction? I am not running the show. Practicing these principles in all my affairs. How honest am I in my relationship? Do I have more affairs than I do principles? How am I doing? I'm broken. We're broken. The flesh is weak. And I don't only mean in the obvious. The flesh is weak. I like things. I like money. I like toys. I like cars. I like how the flesh is weak. We want, it's seductive. That's what I want. And there's pleasure in getting that stuff. What does it do for the spiritual growth? Nothing. This walk is a narrow walk. It's a narrow road. There's some disciplines I need to follow. There's some disciplines I find out I get to follow. And the things that seem to be important, where the flesh would be made weak, with God, I'm not weak. I get strength. And the external conditions get grinded into dust. And I stand free like I am tonight. I can talk about a lot of things that are going on in my life. A lot of great things and some concerns. But I am here tonight free. Free because of God, huh? And by the time we get to step 12, we've experienced this God. We can point to the heavens all we want, and I'm sure there's something up there. But what do we do when we're walking right here, on the ground, on the concrete? How are we doing with God? Got to wait till I get to the pearly gates? My big book tells me the great reality is deep down within, and that's what I pass on to another alcoholic. That is my 12th step. I've gone to the grinding of the ego into dust. Hopefully most of self has died in 4 through 9. I've cleaned up the wreckage of my past in step 9. I've entered the world of the spirit in step 10. I continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness with this power in step 11. I've arrived. We've had the spiritual awakening. What are we doing with it? First things first, go work with a drunk. Go work with a drunk. Our book over and over and over again talks about to survive the certain trials and low spots ahead, go work with a drunk. When sex becomes troublesome, go work with a drunk. Go work with a drunk. When I'm feeling joy and these great things come, go work with a drunk. I remember the day I got married. There was a morning meeting. I went to a meeting. I have to be at church till later on. The affair was that night. Sunday morning. What do? Go to Sunday morning meeting. They says, what are you doing here? You're getting married today. I said, I'm also in a meeting. I'm a drunk. You okay? Yeah, this is what we do. We go to meetings. We work with drunks. I got plenty of time to go home and get dressed and show up for church. God's got that. I'm not even worried about that. Little things like, I remember on my honeymoon, I landed, I was in somewhere in the Caribbean. I get off the plane. I check into the hotel. And the first thing I did was call my sponsor. And he said, I hope you don't need directions. I was new. That's what we do. I was not going to screw around with sobriety. God disciplined me to do certain things. So we go work with drunks. Wednesday night, I'm on the phone with my sponsor. Marion's on the phone with her sponsor. One room, another room, and we do what we do. Accountable, accountability, consistency, accountability, responsibility. CER, car. How's my car doing? Not my Lexus. How's my car doing? My consistency, my accountability, my responsibility. How's your car running? Needs a little work? Good, fix it. Now, because the illness don't care. I see a lot of folks running around Alcoholics Anonymous passing a message on but don't have a sponsor. So what are you passing on? I do this a lot, and I travel the globe doing this. I'm blessed to have that honor and privilege to go do this. And I meet a lot of folks on the road who speak out there just as much as I do. And there's a small group of them who have no sponsors. They get up at that podium, and they're fire and brimstone, 12 steps, big book, on and on, talking about sponsorship, and they don't have sponsors. I can't live like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it was Laurie said, to thine own self be true. When I look in the mirror, the guy looking back is going to give me the truth every time. I haven't been gun-shy to mirror once. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, not going to meetings, as a result of these steps. Going to meetings is sacred. It's a sacred fellowship. The fellowship of the Spirit and the Spirit within the fellowship. It's sacred. The ground we walk on, when we walk into an AA meeting, whether it's this meeting or a meeting in the hood, it's sacred ground, then treat it as such. Get dressed for your AA meeting. Get dressed for your talk. Treat it that way. Because people are going to walk in for the first time and say, this looks like the bar. Sober gentlemen, sober women. But there's more to our Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. It's one side of the triangle. It's our fellowship. And this I found out the hard way because I was going to meetings, and bottomed out in Alcoholics Anonymous. Needed a teacher. There's more to our meetings, more to our sacred fellowship. And that is the program in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, where we get to experience God. We get recovered. And we will have some stuff happen to us in this fellowship. You go to meetings and you're around folks who are awake and alive and awake, not sound asleep thinking they're awake, but awake, spiritually awake. We will get some of that. You'll feel some of that energy when you walk in. It's a band-aid on an open wound like it was for me. But there comes a point where I got to go home and I got to put my head on the pillow and that group isn't there, or maybe someone's not picking up the phone and I need to get God with me. I need to get me with God. I got to experience oneness with God. Here comes our 12 steps. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, where are the steps in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous? Not Hazleton, not some other book out there, but the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And isn't it interesting? Bill Wilson put this book together, was coached by about 40 others. They say the first 100, about 40 folks. They put it together. It's our instructions on how to get recovered. When doctors and shrinks and hypnotists and everyone try to do it for us, we come into AA and somehow we get recovered. 12 spiritual disciplines take the dying and make them alive, because it takes us to God who heals. Right? Having had a spiritual awakening result of these steps. So Bill puts this together with about 40 original members. And then sometimes we go to an AA meeting and we hear folks who are in here a long time shoot down the book, shoot down the 12 steps. Oh, you're a big book, and they have ugly words for those folks. You're a big book so-and-so. But consider themselves to be upstanding members of this fellowship. And here's my question. I don't think any of them are here, but I've asked this question many times. If we consider ourselves upstanding members of Alcoholics Anonymous without 30 or 40 or 50 years, then how could we possibly shoot down the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when it was written by one of our co-founders and said, this is what we need so we don't die? Because if we pass it on orally, it'll get watered down and watered down. It won't look anything like it started. So here we have a book so it doesn't get watered down. Bill Wilson, first 40 members. So how do we consider ourselves upstanding members of a sacred fellowship when we don't want to hear about the book, or you're a big book person and it goes on and on and on? Let's just have a don't drink and go to meetings meeting. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous. I will say that. Alcoholics Anonymous is not don't drink and go to meetings. It appears nowhere in our program. I'm sure when that phrase came out, there was more to it. There was more substance to that. The 12-step call. One of the great things I got to experience early on, and I'm not sober that long, but I hung around the old timers, so always doing 12-step calls, is the 12-step call. I was in a meeting in Bay Ridge one time, Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And a couple of guys came out from under the bridge, and they came down to the meeting, and they reeked, and they were drunk. And you know what some of those folks did? Oh, my God, he's drinking. It's AA. They were appalled that someone wet came into their home group, and they had no idea what to do with him. And God gave me a GPS to navigate through that. I sat down with these two drunks and talked to them. Got them a cup of coffee. They were interested in coffee and donuts. That's all they were interested for. A couple of bucks and get out of there. But I was of service. How do I know that that person may be the one who really wants this? It's not for me to just give it away. That's one of God's children. God gave me that much. The 12-step call, we know how to do a 12-step call. What do you do when you get a drunk and they get sick in your car? Or you take them to the detox and the next morning they're out panhandling. They beat you home many times, right? You guys know what I'm talking about, right? We pass it on. The best 12-step call. I love to talk about this one whenever I get to 12-step. Is Bill and Bob paying a call on Bill Dotson. They go to the hospital. The guy's been in there a few times, beats up nurses when he's drunk. He's a great guy when he's sober. He's a violent drunk. He's a successful attorney. Hit the skids. Bill and Bob said, put him in a private room. We'll be back tomorrow. The guy goes from a ward to a private room, and as it goes, when you went from a ward to a private room, you bought the farm. He comes to, and there's two imposing men standing in front of him, Bill and Bob. And he wants to know, what's this about? You know, what did I do this time? And he says, well, they tell him, we're giving you treatment for alcoholism. Here's what they do. They don't say, well, you potty trained the wrong way. Yeah. How do you feel today, Bill? Let's process your feelings, and I'll give you some meds, give you a script to go to CVS, and you'll feel better. They says, we're giving you treatment for alcoholism. And the two of them anteed up, as we call it. They told him their story in a few minutes. It took an hour. I tell him my story. You tell him your story. And what does he do? That's me. That's me. I drank just like that. They got him. He identified one drunk talking to another drunk, a language of the heart. Then they talk about the mind. They talk about the body. They talk about the spiritual answer they found and how they got it. The guy's in a detox bed. 3 days later, Bill Dotson leaves the hospital. He tells his wife, fetch my clothes, I'm leaving. Never drank again. They cut right through. Can we do that on a 12-step call? I'll close with this because we're out of time. One of my favorite pieces in a lot of books I read this as long as God inspires me to read it. It's not about a 12-step, but it is. It's not about Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's my AA. And it reads this. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way. A ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. That's my Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank you for being with me for the last 12 weeks. That's all I got.